This is your first time down here this year. I think you've been here last year a couple of times.
Not very many times.
Not many.
Mr.
Welcome
Chair,
to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Today we're here to talk about Senate File 2505. 2505 is a bill that directs the department to use some portion of their federal child care dollars in a particular way. So this bill reflects the vision of the Early Childhood Caucus's desire to create a statewide quality rating and improvement system across early childhood care and education programs. And as the committee remembers, we did pass into legislation last year our commitment to move towards a statewide quality rating and improvement system. And of course, the barrier around getting there quickly is about the funding. So we are attempting to legislatively do everything we can to direct the department to move towards this process. So this initiative would expand our vision by helping providers and programs build quality. The legislation builds on the ERA funding that we directed last session toward training, coaching, consultation, and supports for those providers interested in preparing for a statewide QRIS. The ERA funding will start going out to providers this summer through the resource and referral networks, and our bill would move more of the federal CCDF funds toward quality. It's anticipated that 200 providers will be served by the current ERA appropriation. An additional 500,000 should serve more than double that amount. This 500,000 represents 5.5% of the total 9.1 million that Minnesota receives in federal child care development funds. This is not new federal money nor new state money. This CCDF funding has a required percentage set aside for quality. The CCDF funding alignment with the QRIS has been a recommendation of national consultants that we've been working with. As an Early Childhood Caucus, we've been working with Louise Stoney and Ann Mitchell. Providers received this funding before through grants and supports. This only aligns the standards and requirements of the grants with our QRIS. Examples of grants are obtaining free or low-cost training on curriculum and assessment, and consultation on the environmental rating scale. These are not new parent-aware pilot sites, but just continuing to build quality across the state. We want to give providers the opportunity to be involved, even though it's not statewide yet. And before I turn it over to Nancy Johnson, who is sitting beside me, I do want to mention that we have been going around the state during the interim talking to providers about our commitment to launch a statewide QRIS. And one of the things that our providers have been saying consistently is they do need the training and support. They don't have the funds without some additional help. And so that is also why we felt that now is the time to build the quality so that when we are ready to go forward, it's there. So I will be having two people testify today, Nancy Johnson, who is an early childhood education consultant, and Ann McCulley, who's with the Child Care Resource and Referral Network, will also be speaking. So I will turn it over
Ms.
to Nancy.
Ms. Johnson, you might move the microphone close to you because there's a lot of noise upstairs. And
yes, there is.
Or speak loud or both.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I have a PowerPoint. It looks like it might open here. There we go. Let's see. Great. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and senators, and also Senator Rana for asking me to come. I've actually been working with the Early Childhood Caucus over the last couple of years, looking at this strategy of a quality rating system. My name is Nancy Johnson, and as Senator Bonoff said, I've been working in the early childhood field for over 30 years as a provider, a director, an advocate for young children and their parents. And recently, I helped develop and direct an innovative cross-sector community partnership in the Wayzata Plymouth area for low-income families to access scholarships and also use those scholarships at quality-rated programs. And that partnership was funded by the MELF, the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. But why am I testifying in the Health and Family Security Division? Well, We know that when kids aren't ready for kindergarten, and they are not going to be able to do well in life, and that has effects on family stability, on public health, on a lot of different issues that your committee is going to be dealing with. And I'm sure you've already heard that up to 90% of a child's brain develops by age 5, and that children's early experiences set them on a trajectory for life. But one thing that we really have to understand about early childhood care and education is that it's really given and provided in a number of different settings. It doesn't mean that all of those settings are quality. It doesn't mean that all of those settings have always had the funds or the mission to actually be connected to school readiness or to children's development and learning. Some of the funding, frankly, in the past has been pretty focused on parents going to work. But you can see that there's a huge mixture of options, and for most parents in Minnesota, they don't use just one option between when their child is born and then kindergarten. They use many, and actually, when I was a parent, I used 4 of these different options, some of them publicly delivered, some of them privately delivered. Generally, it's a lot of choices for families that work for their flexibility. But right off the bat, I wanted to let you know about the McKinsey report in 2005, which actually Governor Pawlenty asked for this study, and the Itasca Group sponsored it. And what the McKinsey report found is that of the total amount of money going into early care and education in Minnesota, $1.537 billion a year is the total. But you can see 80% of that, or $1.2 billion, comes from parents. Some of those are very low-income parents paying a copay. Some of them are very low-income parents just paying what they can to a friend or neighbor. And some of them are middle and upper-income parents paying a full cost of care. But that's the picture. And when you look at what the government actually spends, and we're talking here about the federal, the state, and even county contributions, it's only about 20% of the total spend in Minnesota. We also know that any setting, whether it's a family child care home, a center, a preschool, in a school-sponsored program, that any of those settings can be high quality. What we need for high quality are highly skilled teachers, age-appropriate curricula, stimulating materials, a language-rich environment, warm, responsive interactions between staff and children, high and consistent levels of child participation. And that's a key one for low-income families who often can't hold on to their subsidy or can't afford payments, co-payments, and so the kids are in and out. And also small class sizes and high adult-child ratios, which, again, that's one of the things that licensing supports. And in our state, the multiple standards that we have for various different types of programs really limit the results that we can expect. It increases costs and takes costs away from going to actually the quality programming. The early childhood education standards often vary by program type, funding stream, and location. So, for instance, Head Start has very different quality standards than a school readiness program in a school district or than a family child care provider in the private sector. Children and families use multiple ECE providers, as I said earlier, and this makes continuity of standards and expectations important. So, for instance, if I'm a parent, I want to know if my family child care provider can get my child ready for school along just as well as if I choose a center or a part-time pre-K. Early care and education programs increasingly have multiple funders also. And so the same program, let's say that you're a Head Start Child Care Partnership, you may have 5 or 6 different funding streams funding one family, and all of them require different kinds of standards and different et cetera. So it becomes very burdensome and not cost-effective. Okay. So quality is essential, and it's also possible in all settings. And the new approach that the Early Childhood Caucus came together on in the last year was this idea of a systemic quality rating and improvement system. It's voluntary, but it allows the system to actually be accountable for outcomes for children, and it also supports incentives for programs to improve and sustain quality. It provides some parent consumer information, so it gives parents better information about particular programs. And it can also connect the incentives for parents to choose those programs through subsidy systems or scholarship programs, et cetera. And it's also a national movement. 22 states now have statewide quality rating and improvement systems. And in federal legislation, in the current administration, is also supporting this kind of an approach. Also, leading researchers, economists, business leaders, and policy leaders recognize the benefits of early education investment, but only if that investment is in good quality child care programs or pre-K programs. And those are the programs that will help break the cycle of poverty, not just putting money into any kind of care. So this quality rating and improvement vision is embraced by the Itasca Group's McKinsey study, the Early Childhood Caucus, the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, which is a business-led effort, the Greater Twin Cities United Way, and the Early Childhood Funders Collaborative. The next speaker is going to go into more detail about the specific bill and how this bill will help providers get ready for ratings. But right now, we're testing something called the Parent Aware Quality Rating and Improvement System. You can see it's in St. Paul, the city of Minneapolis, Wayzata and Blue Earth, and Nicollet counties. And two things I want to say about the Parent Aware Quality Rating System pilot that we're doing in Minnesota that really make it stand out from all the other states that are experimenting with these quality rating systems. And one is that we are really looking at school readiness as one of the outcomes for this system. And the other is that it's really focused on parents, on really giving parents information and reaching them with the information they need to make good choices. The ratings are based on family partnerships, teaching materials and strategies, tracking learning, provider education and training, and child safety. These are pretty common across all states. It's very parent-friendly, and in fact, parent-aware is even more so than many states, as I mentioned, and you can see this in your PowerPoint. This slide, I just wanted to let you know that in addition to a structure of star ratings, you can also, as a state, connect different kinds of fundings to the various different star levels. So this chart shows that you can give providers incentives to move up the different levels, but it also shows that you can incentivize parents to choose higher quality.
Ms. Johnson, I think what that chart really shows is that some of us need better glasses.
Yeah, well, that wasn't such a great chart. But
That would be interesting. I think some of us might like to see that if you could get us a copy of it larger.
Yep, Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to get copies for you. So to close, the progress towards this vision is obviously that the Early Childhood Caucus has supported the vision bill. In 2010, the Department of Human Services and the Minnesota Department of Education are developing common standards for programs. This bill, Senate File 2505, will help programs get ready for ratings. And the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation's Parent Aware pilot will come in with their evaluation showing how kids actually improve in these programs in the fall of 2010. So really what this bill before you today does is it keeps the momentum going for the quality rating and improvement system in a very difficult time when we can't expect a large amount of funding. And what's next is the evaluation will be coming from MELF in the fall, as I said, and then the Early Childhood Caucus will review the recommendations and create bills to support a quality rating and improvement system to meet the state's need for accountability, parents' needs for information and choices, and children's needs for quality child development. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. And now I'll ask Ann McCauley to come and... very good. And while she's getting ready, I wanted to let the people in the committee know that if you go to parentaware.com on your computer, you can actually see what's happening. It's a wonderful system.
Parentawareratings.org.
Sorry. Parentawareratings.org. You can click on your community and see what providers have been rated. You know, it's, if you're in these sites in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Blue Earth County, or Wayzata.
Thanks. Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann McCulley. I am Executive Director of the Minnesota Child Care Resource and Referral Network, and here to pick up where Nancy left off, I guess, in terms of talking about what we've been doing and where we can envision these quality dollars going. Just to restate what Senator Bonhoff mentioned at the beginning, we are talking about what are called the quality dollars, the Child Care Development Fund. When it comes to the state, 4% of those dollars are set aside to fund broadly defined elements of quality, and that's the majority of the funding that rolls through our system. What you have in front of you, I see you leafing through, is the brochure that describes particularly the work we do around provider supports, be it training, grants, scholarships, things that we feel already are down that path of quality. This is the way we are structured, just so you know. Our duties actually as a system are in statute, which a lot of people don't know, and we are structured around the governor's economic development regions. So there are 16 resource and referral agencies around the state serving 19 regions and making sure those services are available throughout the state. Our office actually works as the behind-the-scenes support to those 16 agencies. Here's a quick glimpse at our mission. We work, even though today we're talking mostly about provider supports, just want you to know that we also help families find child care, talk to them about how to choose quality child care. We do the important quality supports, but we also try to educate the community on what we're learning from parents and providers about the needs and demands of child care. And for those of you who are visual learners, there's the visual version of the mission. I always throw that in because I think it's a good way for people to understand what it is we do. That's what it makes us a little bit unique compared to some other organizations, in that we truly work with all three communities, if you will, and collectively try to address that issue of child care. Ms. Johnson showed you the categories on one of her slides of what are currently included in the Parent Aware pilots. One thing I should say is that our office and our regional resource and referral agencies really are currently we call it the front door for Parent Aware, meaning providers who want to be fully rated, go through that rating process, start with us. And we have staff that do technical assistance and coaching for them. We are the ones to administer improvement supports to help them once they realize where they need to improve, go through that process. So we've worked with almost 100 providers now and had a really good taste of where are the needs for supports. Where, if we had another 6 months or a year, let's say, where would it have been great to invest time and support with these providers so that they were that much more ready to step through that door? And that's really the premise we're using, thinking ahead to this building quality. It may be a while before other communities in the state can be in a rating process, but we can make good use of this time by putting emphasis on areas where we have already seen there is need for support. So these are the broad categories. I won't spend time going through each one of these. It probably needs a whole other presentation, but just wanted you to see that we are following those. And while the evaluation will tell us a lot about which subparts of those are going to be measured more than others or count more than others, these are research-based. We feel like these are important areas to spend time in almost regardless of where we head next with the weight rating system. There's another sheet in the back of your brochure, which is a mock-up of where we envision going. Partially, as was stated at the beginning, these are supports that are beginning to roll out because of additional ERA stimulus funds. But this shift of $500,000 we envision would allow us to do even more with these supports. And we're still in the planning phase because, of course, the dollars aren't there yet, but we do envision using a building quality checklist that providers would use off the bat. There would be additional grants. Really, the best way I think to describe it is to take the kinds of things we already do under grants, scholarships, and training, and more finely focus them on the elements that tie to getting ready for rating. So it's not a huge shift, but it's a focusing in of the resources that we already spend in the field. And then I just thought it might be interesting. I assume that as Senate at the committee, you would be wondering whether there's either need or interest. Every year, you may not know this, but the other thing the Child Care Resource and Referral System does is the market rate survey that leads to the information that is used to set child care assistance rates. As a part of that survey, though, we also offer an optional survey providers can take and ask lots of questions about their experience with our system and also some questions about emerging trends. And so I won't read to you, but here are some of the quotes we asked this year. Are you interested in participating in a quality rating and improvement system? And the first set of quotes here, a lot of people seeing it as a self-interest of it will help me improve, it will better my business, that kind of a thing. I call your attention to that last quote. With Parent Aware not being available to us yet, we are always looking for ways to improve our program, which is kind of the idea here. And then several that also answered yes and went on to talk more about this whole profession needs attention. This whole profession needs to be brought up. It's important to have standards. We agree with standards. Parents want standards and information. And again, this bottom line, we seem to be in a holding pattern with more emphasis on quality, but without resources to make it happen. And I think that's the other strong takeaway about using the shift of these dollars is that we know the providers that we work with are, all providers really, are operating on a very thin margin. So whatever we do, we have to make these things accessible. We have to make them easy to take up, and we also need to make them appropriate both culturally and to each child care setting. So we've got a row in front of us to hoe. We also asked a few questions about already are you using some of the tools that are in that list. So do you use a curriculum? And people are sometimes surprised to discover that in child care, particularly for family child care providers, use of a curriculum, certainly a formal curriculum, is not always the case. And there are lots of ways to do curriculum, but this gives us a snapshot. We were sitting at about 70% the last couple of years saying, yes, I use some kind of curriculum, and we're going up on the more formal, but we still have an awful lot of folks piecing things together. And through Parent Aware, we have ways that you can bring that pieced together piece in and be looked at, but we still have a lot of folks who aren't using any kind of curriculum. This is also asking, do you formally track the progress of your children in care? That's one of the measures in quality rating, and you've seen that steadily go up. We're up to about 40% of providers saying, yes, I track how the kids are doing in some kind of formal way, but we still have a ways to go on that. So some of the getting ready would be to help more providers be able to do that. And then we also, in the Wilder research study that looked at the workforce, they asked this question. This is about 3 years old, but it's the most current data I could find. Have you used a mentor or a coach? And you see that it's much more common for center directors, but a lot less common for licensed family child care providers. And yet we know that working one-on-one with a coach, with a mentor, brings great rewards. So the ability to do that with these dollars would be wonderful. I'll just close. That's a quote from one of our staff who works on the environment rating scale. That's one of, again, the tools in Parent Aware. It's a way to come in and observe a program and look at interactions with children and also the environment. We started now funding where we've got one person per region who can go in and do this coaching. And I'll just skip to the bottom couple of paragraphs. The consultant's ability to come into a home or center with an unbiased but trained eye, assist in creating a plan for change, and then follow up on how well that plan worked has proven to be an outstanding way to support child care providers. And if you jump down to the end, supported providers are willing to invest time, energy, and money when they are guided to see ways to build a quality program. So that is what we would hope to do through the resource and referral system with dollars that would be reallocated for quality efforts.
And Mr. Chair, I learned that there is an additional person who would like to say a few things if the committee does, time permitting. Is that?
Briefly, yes, would be okay.
Amy Loeschler.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about the impact of providing training and coaching, consultation, and supports to prepare for the voluntary Minnesota Quality Rating System. I am Amy Leckler, the Umbrella Alliance Project Coordinator, and I coordinate two separate mentoring projects or on-site consultation projects that have been incredibly successful for the State Child Care Alliance agencies in Minnesota. The first is the MLF CCA Mentor Project, which supports the highest standard of care for children in Minnesota's diverse licensed family child care homes through education, resources, recognition, and advocacy. I also coordinate a project for the Umbrella Strategic Alliance, which its mission, the Accreditation Facilitation Project, is to support family center and school age programs on their pathway to program improvement and with the end goal of accreditation. The success of the AFP has been based on the consultation model, which we've broken down into three tiered services. It's been our experience that providing programs with on-site consultation is the foundation for building quality programs and supporting school readiness. We strongly support the bill to provide training, coaching, in preparation for the voluntary Minnesota Quality Rating System, and we currently have had a successful system built on this proven strategy. Currently, MLF CCA with the accreditation facilitation project, which piloted in 2007, had one accredited family provider. We currently have 12, with numerous more in process. Over 40 family center and school age programs achieved national accreditation, and 371 programs received some sort of on-site consultation through our project. Recent research results have also proven that consultation is an increasingly utilized method of quality enhancements in both early childhood classrooms and family child care homes. In a recent study done with researchers at the University of North Carolina and colleagues in 24 states, conducted, one of which was Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, concluded the benefits of on-site consultation. So in conclusion, we ask that you support the bill to provide statewide child care to providers to promote coaching and consultation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonoff, is this legislation necessary in order that this happens?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, the department could choose to use this money in this way, and I suspect that they might do that. I think one of the things that we have felt since the ERA funding has been coming to Minnesota, that we as legislators would like to be able to voice our preference and our commitment to how policy moves forward in Minnesota. So this bill gives us as legislators a chance to do that. I do have a great relationship and trust in the people at the agency, but I think it actually supports their work when we send a clear message. Is that clear?
Thank you.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to use this opportunity to ask about the scale of the work that you do, because I think it's important for us to get educated about the need. Senator Bonoff, you know that quite well. But Ms. McCauley, you work with 14 referral agencies right now that I would like you to help me complete sentences now that work with approximately how many children?
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Gray, it's harder for me to express it in terms of children served. What would be easier for me to express would be in terms of providers served. For instance, 2,000 child care trainings were held last year for over 30,000 family child care providers, all child care providers, family center and family friend and neighbor.
Okay. So. And so if we are to map out this within the community or the universe of families and providers, tell me what is the percentage?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, the funding to begin with that goes out to the resource and referral system, how that gets decided is based on a funding formula that looks at the number of children, it looks at underserved, it looks at geographical distance, and it looks at the number of providers. And I could tell you the algebraic formula past that, but it takes all of that into consideration in terms of just the base funding. Then each of those resource and referral agencies make choices about the grant dollars based, again, on some of those same formulas about what they're going to be able to put out into the field for providers. What this envisions is the ability to do more of those grants or to certainly do more grants that are specifically tied, as I said earlier, to some of the quality elements. How many? Because we're still working out how this, I think you heard Senator Bonoff mention, there is probably about 200 more providers being served just with the ERA funds. Our hope would be to double that. But until we work out exactly how the dollars are flowing, it's hard to be pinned down to a number. I would say it would be at least double that, and it's small. I mean, it's small considering we have 11,000 family child care providers in the state and 2,000 centers, but it's a start, and that's where we'll start.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, just because I do appreciate where your questions are going, I would say that it's insufficient to the need, and that it is my intention next year to come forward with a comprehensive funding bill. This isn't a funding year. It doesn't seem like this is the appropriate year to bring that forward, but I would like your partnership in doing that.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bonoff. And, Mr. Chair, I think what I I'm hoping to do is that, you know, when we really talk about this and we think that we are making progress, we really need to review the numbers. So we're talking about, you know, really trying to put together some funding to serve 2,000 when, in fact, the universe is 11,000 or more. And so it's a very small fraction of the providers that we need to serve. And so I think it's important that we know that, you know, $500,000 will only help a tiny little bit and that we need to do a lot more. So thank you, Senator Bonham.
Yeah.
Thank you. Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonham, just a couple of questions. So maybe you guys covered this already and it slid past me somehow. But so I understand how we would use this $500,000 to provide this training. Is this... You're going to put an RFP out to an organization that would then go out there and do this work? And if so, you know, I'm looking at the slides said that, like, DHS and MDE would be developing common standards. What, as far as doing training and things like that, what standards are we using to actually, at this point, if we get the money this year and the standards aren't quite developed yet, what's the approach you're taking to actually go out there and do this training?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, I will explain first the funding flow. Actually, this is building on what's already in statute, at least the piece that we do, the resource and referral system, and that's 119B, and there's a description of the grants program. So this is building on funding that's already in statute that describes the flow of the dollars, who gets those dollars in terms of the agencies, what criteria they have to meet, how they're contracted with the Department of Human Services. As I mentioned in my testimony, we're starting with what we're doing with the Parent Aware pilot, because those are broad categories, that while the finer-tuned standards are being developed, there are still, for instance, do you know what a curriculum is and how do you choose a curriculum? Not necessarily the finer details about how to implement every type of curriculum, but we have a long way to go just to get people comfortable with the ideas of curriculum or the importance of doing an assessment and tracking the learning of your children. We're starting with that level of detail, hoping that by the time the full evaluation and standards are developed, we've got some people ready to take that next step.
And Mr. Chair, one follow-up, if I might. So if we have in my district, I know that we have some pretty good programs going right now, then you're not there to try to change anything that they're doing. You're just building upon that. And are you going to try to – is any of this money being able to be used at all to help them expand what they're doing just in the neighborhoods there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, first of all, I would say that some of the grants that we currently give in terms of bricks and mortar grants through the resource and referral agencies might be available for that type of purpose. Secondly, no, we're not there to change anybody. This is a voluntary system, so if programs see that this is a help to them, they come to our door and take advantage of it. If not, there's nobody telling them they have to.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, one of the things I've been surprised when I've been to these sessions where the providers have been invited to come and have a large session to hear about quality rating improvement system, and then we get into these small focus groups and talk to them. We did one in my community about 2 weeks ago. I think that over 100 providers there. I was like, how did you know? These people have an amazing network that they just, you know, I don't know what they do, but the people know about them. And so in these small groups, they talked about they were just hungry for this training. And they were saying, you know, when can I get the training? And I was pretty impressed with that.
Senator Torres-Ray moves Senate file 2505 be recommended pass referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there any discussion of that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Take up Senate file 2359.
See you.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senate File 2359 would move the Comprehensive Advanced Life Support Program to the Department of Health from the Board of Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board. We have an A1 amendment, the author's amendment, to include the funding to go along with it, which was an oversight in the bill drafting. So I'd move the A1 amendment.
Any questions on the amendment? If not, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Marty.
And members, there's a one-page sheet in your packets. It says SF2359 Marty at the top and has Ambulance Association's O.J. Doyle's calling card at the bottom that gives a brief explanation of what we're doing here and why, and Mr. Doyle is here to speak briefly to the bill.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If you could please introduce yourself.
Excuse me. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is O.J. Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the Comprehensive Advanced Life Support Program. This is a rather unique program, and I won't go too far into the details, but it's been in place for roughly a decade, and it was created in response to the challenges of rural emergency providers to try and make it easier for them to take their continuing education. As you know, like emergency physicians, paramedics, EMTs, nurses all have to have continuing education every 2 or 4 years, depending upon the discipline. And this includes a number of courses, anything from advanced trauma life support to cardiac advanced life support. This program was created to distill all of these training initiatives into one program, and it's unique in that the instructors go to the rural hospital rather than having the rural providers come into the metro area. There's always problems finding substitute staff, standby physicians, and then it's taught to everybody involved with a team approach to emergency medical care, the provision of emergency medical care. It's the legislature has been very supportive of this program initially. There was a subsidy that was put forward of $108,000. This was increased a number of years ago. Thank you. To $408,000. It helps keep the tuition and the cost of the class within reasonable amount, particularly for the nurses, paramedics, and the other personnel who are volunteers. We're requesting that it be moved from under the MS Regulatory Board to the Minnesota Department of Health, because this program is accepted training criteria for some of the rural trauma centers. The trauma system is under the auspices of the Minnesota Department of Health, and it seems like it's a better fit to have all of the trauma components in one place. And I've spoken with the chair, Jim Reiber, of the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board. He said there should be no problem with this whatsoever. I can't speak for the health department, but I do not believe they have any objections to this, and there are no other objections that I'm aware of. It doesn't seek to increase the amount of money, just to shift the program and the funding over to the health department.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty and Mr. Doyle, do you think there would be any efficiencies in terms of having the health department administer this as opposed to a freestanding general funded agency?
Mr. Doyle.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I am not familiar enough with the internal workings of the health department to be able to answer that.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I think I saw Ms. Burke Moore here. I don't know that she has to testify. She could just answer how the Emergency Services Board, Medical Services Board, has administered it, but I don't know of any opposition. I'll move the bill. I will move the bill as amended to be recommended pass, referred to the Committee on Finance.
Any questions? Senator Bergen.
Senator Marty, this bill doesn't have to go to government operations.
Senator Marty.
We have not had any requests from there. Why don't we... Yeah. I don't know that they would. I mean, why don't we refer it to finance, and I will talk to Senator Rest beforehand and catch it on the floor if so. Okay. Thanks for pointing that out.
Any further questions? If not, on Senator Marty's motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The bill is adopted and will be referred. Thank you, Senator Marty. Next in the agenda, we have Senate File 2596. Senator Brenda Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 2596. This bill makes modifications in current licensure for psychologists, and it includes an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, that I'd like to offer at this time.
It's being distributed. That's the delete everything amendment?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And I'll speak to
why don't you start explaining the bill as amended?
Okay. And I'd like to say that we're not aware of any opposition to the bill. It has been drafted in consultation with the Board of Psychology, and the bill includes five parts. The first one, it provides reciprocity for psychologists licensed in another jurisdiction as they apply for full licensure in the state of Minnesota. This allows already licensed individuals who are moving into our state for a job to practice while they are going through the licensure process. The second provision extends the length of guest licensure from 30 days to 9 months, and this will allow professionals who come to the state for a period of time to practice without applying for full licensure. For example, if a licensed psychologist from another jurisdiction was completing a sabbatical in Minnesota and wished to supervise students, this change would allow them to practice. And then the third provision provides language to administer the volunteer license. This license has been in statute, but psychologists have been unable to access it because there was no information on how to administer it in terms of fees, continuing education, et cetera. Fourth, it redefines the makeup of the Board of Psychology. This is included at the board's request. Because psychologists are no longer licensed at the master's level, the language would change one member's seat from representing a master psychology training program to an individual representing a doctoral training program. And the fifth provision allows psychologists to be the last reviewer of appeals for denial of services by health plans. Psychologists could review appeals for all behavioral health practitioners, but psychiatrists, who explicitly would be reviewed by other psychiatrists. Currently, psychiatrists complete the final review for all but psychologists. This is not cost-effective and requires an extra step in the review process since there is a psychologist that reviews it, but then it has to go to a psychiatrist for final approval. So the Council of Health Plans support this change. And those are the five provisions. I stand for any questions, but I also have with me Tricia Stark, who's the Director of Professional Affairs for the Minnesota Psychological Association, and she would like to address the committee also.
Mr. Chair, Senators, I'm Dr. Tricia Stark, and I'm a licensed psychologist with a private practice in Minneapolis and Director of Professional Affairs for the Minnesota Psychological Association. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. As Senator Prettner-Solon mentioned, there are five parts to this bill. The first allows individuals who have been previously licensed in another jurisdiction to practice temporarily while they're getting full licensure. An example would be we had one individual who was unable to be licensed for 2 years when she came to Minnesota. And that just is a big problem for her livelihood, and this would allow her to practice while she was becoming fully licensed. it sometimes takes the Board of Psychology a long period of time to get the necessary documents for full licensure.
May I interrupt?
Sarah Prentner,
Mr. Chair, we did have testimony in the Finance Division yesterday about the difficulty with licensure, and especially as we keep cutting those funds and how long it is taking for those licensures to occur. So this would help to assist in getting people licensed sooner, or at least allowing them to practice while their license is being reviewed.
And the change in guest licensure to allow someone to practice for 9 months, the change from 30 days, before someone could practice for 30 days across a year's time, and this would be for a 9-month period, and it would be easier to track when guests were practicing rather than just they were practicing for 30 days sometime during a year. The volunteer license, it has been in statute. We've had some really important volunteers who volunteer for the Red Cross, and because they're retired, they've been unable to do it. They've volunteered for disaster response over the years, and they've been unable to go to disasters. And once the volunteer license is in, the administrative part is in place, they will again be able to do that. The Board of Psychology, it's really just because the doctoral degree is a terminal license now, and there really isn't a master's program in psychology, a training program. That's why there's a shift from a master's representative to a doctoral representative. And finally, that psychologists would be reviewing for a final appeal the work of other psychotherapists. We would not be reviewing the work of psychiatrists because that's outside of our scope of practice. So.
There are questions from members of the committee. Is there anybody in the audience who had any concerns about any provisions in the bill? Say, trying to read the section one of the bill. But doctoral level psychologist shall not review any request or final determination not to certify.
Yeah, it's confusing.
It's confusing. Yeah, I don't want to try and read that chapter. Is there any discussion? Does this bill go to?
I think it goes to the floor, Mr. Chair.
Sarah Prentner, someone moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. On the bill, any discussion? If not, Senator Prentner, someone moves Senate file 2596 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're done at 1:36. With that,
wow.
Committee is adjourned.
All right, way to run the meeting.
Into shock.
I move that we adjourn.
The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
A new record.
Wonderful.
This is a treat for us.
Who's here too?
Don't get used to